I think in a lot of these cases, there are two sort of recurring issues. One is comparable licenses, and the second is apportionment. And I think we see that over and over again. Challenges, Daubert challenges at the district court level about whether or not a license is truly comparable, and then whether a proper apportionment has been performed. Leah, is there a case you could talk to us about that may have involved similar issues?
Well, so the Federal Circuit addressed PAVO in this past year, where they were talking about the apportionments and split issues as well. And there, it was both, actually. There was a license, and there was also this question of how to handle this split. So PAVO was a case about the flash drives. And the flash drives, some of us may have them, where you can spin them and not lose the cap. And in that case, there was a license agreement that the parties agreed was comparable. And so that was kind of a somewhat unique circumstance to start with. The parties were in agreement as to the comparable license agreement. It had a 1% royalty rate and included explanatory language saying that that 1% was 25% of the profit on the licensed product. So the damages expert used that framework from the license to opine on a profit, that a profit split model would be appropriate, using that 25% from the license agreement. He took that 25% and then he adjusted it. He adjusted it based on the unique facts and circumstances of that case and adjusted it downward to, I believe it was around 18%. There was an apportionment challenge. The apportionment challenge was that the materials costs for the product were less than the damages expert's overall royalty amount, which the Federal Circuit made pretty short shrift of that argument and said, you're comparing apples to oranges. These, you know, the value of the patents, the patented functionality is totally different than the cost of the materials. And rejected that as an apportionment challenge. Because the parties agreed that the license at issue was comparable, it made it much easier, I think, for the plaintiff to support this idea that the built-in apportionment within the license was usable and was unchallenged effectively. And so that was that built-in apportionment. And the damages expert was able to use that adjusted 25%, and the Federal Circuit said it was fine. The apportionment was already accounted for as part of the license.
So built-in apportionment is kind of a recent idea, I think, of the Federal Circuit. And if I'm right, I think it kind of started to bubble up in the CSIRO case. Is built-in apportionment like a real thing, or is that an easy way to kind of get around challenges to licenses? Do you have a view on that, Leah?
I think it's a little of both. I think when you talk to business owners, they say, you know, the way we do our licenses is typically to, you know, kind of adjust our rates based on, you know, the patent practicing object, you know, whatever the product is, and we adjust our rates accordingly. And so they'll say, yeah, I mean, we don't slice and dice our products down to, like, the tiniest patent practicing component of our product when we do a license. But on the other hand, you also see licenses where they were the product of litigation, where there's clearly litigation-oriented parts of these license agreements, especially by smaller entities who've been targeted in a patent infringement case, and they just want to settle for the cost of litigation or less. They just want to get out of the litigation, and so you'll end up seeing some settlement licenses with terms that may not be the natural outcome of a business deal.
Let's be a little cynical. Sometimes these licenses are litigation-driven.
Right.
Not just for use with that particular defendant, but for use later use against bigger defendants, right. defendants who have deeper pockets. Aaron, do you have any views on that?
Well, I think the Pavo example, I think, is really interesting for anybody here. Was when Professor Limley was talking, he had called this one out as litigation-driven, and I think there was language in it that said, you know, the 25% profit figure is exclusive of add-on features like extra memory or extra speed or things like that to sort of, you know, built-in apportionment in that sense seems to be sort of constructed precisely to withstand this sort of challenge. I think that's probably atypical. Usually when we're looking at talking about comparable licenses and built-in apportionment, we're talking about, you know, is the similarity in the technology close enough? Is the similarity in the patents themselves close enough to sort of say, look, the value attributed or the rate paid under this license is a fair approximation of what would take place in the hypothetical negotiation? And that's where I think a lot of the cases, at least at the Federal Circuit, have added some commentary about how do you deal with things that are not going to line up one for one.
So there was a lot there. I'm going to take that in a couple of parts. So when you've got a license that's not perfectly comparable, it's got more patents than are at issue in the case, maybe there are more products than are different types of products than are at issue in the case, how do damages experts need to account for that, according to the Federal Circuit? Do they need to just acknowledge, hey, there are some differences here, maybe do a little hand-waving?